When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
In a reality of phantoms and monsters. They exist among us, and sometimes they win. Even the devil was an angel once. The world has its own rules, and these rules are not human. Some of us seek answers to the origin and existence of cryptids and the unexplained. Join us as we venture beyond the known and accepted boundaries. Welcome to our nightmare. I think you're going to like it. There we are. Hey, folks, how you doing? Welcome to Phantoms and Monsters Radio, and thanks again for joining me. So, as many of my friends and associates can attest, I have advocated that people not only ask, but demand assistance from their guardian angels. They are paired with us at birth, and they're continuously around us to assist in our lives. There are usually two at a time, eventually replaced by others as our lives progress. Now, I'm not a religious person, and I don't consider angels as being heavenly beings. Is there a connection between them and a higher being? I believe that may be true. But religion and dogma play no role, in my opinion. They are supernatural, non-human entities that exist for us. Now, are these guardian angels ultra-terrestrials? Yeah, I do believe that they are, but they're also non-corporeal. But now, before I go any further, I want to state that this channel is made possible by you clicking on the subscribe and like buttons. And by sharing our programming, Super Chat and Super Thanks donations are appreciated. And you can also click the dollar icon located underneath the chat box. Buy Me a Coffee link is also shown below. So thanks for your consideration. I want to thank and I want to welcome all new members to the channel, as well as first timers in the chat. If you are listening to me for the first time, please like and subscribe to the channel. Now, if you're in the chat and you have questions, please use all caps, and I'll try to get to each one after my presentation, and I will let you know when I'm on the last account so you can start posting your questions. So anybody can connect with their guardian angel, actually. I mean, people often think that they must be religious or psychic to make this connection. That's not true. We are all born with our own guardian angels, and they never stop surrounding us with love, support, and guidance. These angels help us stay connected with our spiritual source. We also have spirit and or ancestral guides that help, you know, help us find our way, though in most cases, guides are more difficult to connect with. Now, as we raise our vibration, we can more easily connect and communicate with wiser energies in the spirit realms. And seeking an angel's help is one of our most powerful spiritual practices, but you need to ask, and like I said earlier, sometimes demand. So let's get started. A Washington man who was rehabbing for alcohol abuse became stressed and decided to go to the local bar to drink. He met up with a vicious dog twice that evening, blocking his way to the bar. Now he states, I have so many encounters with the weird and strange, I don't even know where to start. But I think you will like this story. This crazy, scary dog stopped me from drinking one night. Now, this happened in Port Orchard, Washington, around 2009. I was in a program called Drug Court, which required me to take random UAs, stay sober, and pretty much get my life back together because I had got caught up with a marijuana charge in 2008. So instead of doing the 2 years in prison they wanted to give me, I had the opportunity to do a program of recovery called Drug Court. I jumped at the opportunity. I was sober for about 9 or 10 months and was in a relationship with a lady that I'm still friends with today. I tend to have a sixth sense about this, and I had a bad feeling she was cheating on me. And I was looking for an excuse to go drink. I made up my mind and started to leave the house, which was up a steep hill toward the dark road next to a park. I would have to continue past the park down another steep hill. Now, once I got to the top of my hill to walk towards the park, I was stopped suddenly in my tracks because about 50 to 60 yards away from me was a dark, black, muscular, vicious-looking pit bull or Rottweiler. I don't know which one it was. I'm not completely sure, and I did not want to find out. It was just sitting in the middle of the road, blocking my path to the bar. So I said, nope, and turned around and walked back down my hill, through my backyard, over a fence, through my neighbor's yard, to get to a gravel road that led to about the middle of the other hill I had to walk down to get to the bar. Now, this was quite a long way away from where I originally planned to walk because I don't feel like going out of my way and walking through the neighbor's yards. So I'm walking down the gravel road and suddenly I see the same dog just walk up to the end of the gravel road, which was probably 30 or 40 yards away from me, and just sit in the middle of the gravel road growling at me. I was scared to death that this dog was going to attack me, but it just sat there and I could hear it growling from far away. I'm 100% positive it was the same dog. But how did this dog even know where I was headed? How did that dog even know to stop me the first time? I was completely blown away and confused. I just wanted to get drunk and forget about my girlfriend for the time being. So to keep a long story short, I turned around, walked back through my neighbor's yard, over the fence, and back to my house and called my sponsor. I didn't drink that night. And I stayed sober for another year and a half after that. Not sure if that was my guardian angel or what. I've told the story before in AA meetings, and I'll end with this. Whenever I want to screw up my life, it just seems like God sends evil demon dogs after me. No joke. I've never seen the dog since, and I really hope I don't again. It's an interesting story. In this next account, an experiencer contacted me about an encounter at home that they believe may have been an angel, possibly the Archangel Michael. There was also an attempt at audible communication. Now they state, hello, Lon. I heard you talk about your belief connection with angels during an interview you had given. I've decided to tell you about my unexplained encounter. One night about a year ago, I was lying in my bed, and I don't even know that I'm sleeping, but I keep hearing a toilet flush. Then I keep hearing knocks on the door. I keep hearing voices, and then suddenly I say, angels, angels, please help me. Next thing I know, this 7-foot-tall being comes through my ceiling and lands by the bed next to me, and he's completely golden. A 7-foot-tall, muscular, very muscular, blonde hair and blue eyes. He had armor on and a huge sword. Anyway. So I'm like looking at him and I'm like, oh my God, you're so beautiful. Well, a second or two later, my ears start ringing. And then also this voice came into my head. I've never heard anything else anybody else's voice in my head, but it was a voice that wasn't coming through my ears. You know what I mean. It wasn't a thought, but it was in my head. And he was speaking this language I'd never heard before. I remember I was trying to tune into it in my mind, trying to better hear it, but it just got louder and louder, like deafening. And then I woke up. I just shook my head and then woke up, and it was crazy because I didn't even know I was asleep. Now, I've been having a lot of dreams like that when I wake up and I'm able to leave my body and walk around my house, but I can't leave my house yet. What is going on with me? And what kind of language did I hear? Did the Archangel Michael appear before me? Well, you know, when I got back to him, I think he may have heard the Enochian or Enochian language that the 16th century occultist John Dee and Edward Kelly believed was a celestial speech. It allowed magicians and occultists to communicate with the angelic realms. There's a book out, Enochian, the Mysterious Lost Language of the Angels. John Dee wrote the book. I've occasionally detected different dialects during my communications with my birth and my guardian angels, including Linglish, but though it's rare in my experience, and my communications usually realized through my mind's eye and visualization. So a Florida man was having difficulties in his life, and as he sat alone contemplating past events, he was approached by a woman who he believed was an angel that was divinely sent to him. So he says, okay, here we go. I've had a few unexplained experiences, but this one was about an angel. It was the summer of 2017. I was in a really bad time in my life and had recently broke up with my girlfriend. Another girlfriend had just passed on a few years before that. I was horribly depressed even at the gathering of friends at a night spot where we gathered on Thursdays. So I sat out front on the sidewalk and had like a comatose posturing deal going on, just crying and crying for like 30 minutes straight. Friends came and went to check up and stuff, but a totally weird thing happened about 45 minutes of going over the past few years in my head, how horrible everything had been. Out of nowhere, a lady touched me on my shoulder and said, "Can I help you? Is there anything I can do for you?" My first thought was, please don't be another Christian who wants to pray for me. But I responded, to help me not mess up my life. I was bitter and angry. Then things got weird. We kept talking, you know, and she's like, "So I just got this feeling passing by." And this was at the West Oaks Mall in Ocoee, Florida. And she said, "I had the random urge to drive right up here into this parking lot and walk right up to you." Weird, right? But then she starts talking about life and how she broke her rib and how she's learned so much about life through the injury. Then this lady says that she was divinely gifted and that the Creator was talking through her. Now, I just didn't quite understand why I continued to talk to her, but I felt compelled to listen. So eventually she says, "Your name is Adam, right?" Just like total eyebrow, look over the shoulder moment, I'm like, yeah. And I looked around to see if my friends put her up to this, but they were still inside. She continues saying, "You're going to change this world. You're going to use your gifts and talents to bring true joy, progress, and change to this world." I kind of marvel at that statement. She assures me again that it's not her speaking, but the Creator speaking through her. She mentioned a few other events in my life that I can't quite recall, but they were very personal things that she would never have known otherwise. I begged her for a human name, and she finally gave me one. She said her name was Natalie. My heart and soul were broken opened like a walnut by this experience, and I never saw her again. And she did offer me to buy me dinner, but I felt like I was in the presence of an angel or a higher force, and I couldn't lie, so I insisted on revealing. I had just eaten before we met. It was indeed a spiritual experience. I am grateful for this angel rescuing me during a moment of absolute despair. Not long after my encounter with the angel, I met a wonderful girl who was quite in tune with the paranormal and unexplained phenomena. I truly believe that she was sent to me after my angel encounter. Now, I will admit that after talking to the angel, I went home, lay in bed, and asked that I meet a wonderful woman who I could learn to trust and love. It seems that my wishes were answered. Now, a Canadian mother and son are stuck in the snow along the road. They then notice a young woman dressed in black who signals that she'll push the car. Suddenly, the car lurches forward and the woman vanishes. Now, this is the account. Now, this was a few years ago. I was in the car with my mom on the way home from visiting a friend. It was winter in southern Canada, so there was a ton of snow and driving was hard. Now, the car ends up getting stuck in the deep snow. For those who don't know, it's extremely difficult to get a car out of the snow because the wheels will lose grip and just keep spinning. Often you need to get a tow truck, tie chains and wheels on the wheels, put wooden planks down, or have at least three strong guys push the car out, or all the above. Now, as my mom and I were figuring out what to do, as we had nothing to get the car unstuck, I saw a girl standing about 10 feet away. She must have been crossing the road and noticed us. The thing is, I didn't see her walk up to us. She looked to be in her early 20s. She just looked like a normal person with dark shoulder-length hair, was wearing black winter clothes, and had a backpack on as well. She signaled that she was going to try to push the car from behind. We nod. My mom tries driving, but no luck. My mom said, "Go out and help her push the car." As I went to unbuckle my seatbelt, the car went forward as if there was no snow at all. As I said before, it doesn't get unstuck that easily. As we drove, we both turned to wave and thank the girl, but she was gone. There's nowhere she could have gone in such a short amount of time. And to be honest, there is no way she could have pushed the vehicle by herself out of the snow. We haven't seen her since, and I always wonder who or what she was. A man relays his personal story told to him by his father. Now, when the man was young, he was near death in the hospital. A priest came to bless him, but it's later discovered that the priest was not on duty that day. Hi, Lon. My dad recently told me this story, and I was just amazed. I thought you would like to hear it. Now, when I was young, about 3 or so, I was hospitalized and near death. I had a fever that just would not break and was passed out for most of the hospitalization. My dad, who has always been very religious, wanted the hospital's priest to come say a prayer for me. So the priest comes to pray for me, but something's not right about the guy. He never gives his name and has no Bible. He says the entire prayer in Latin and blesses me. Now, my parents aren't married yet, and since the priest is there, they asked why they hadn't been able to have another child yet. They had been trying for about a year with no luck. The priest tells them that they won't have another child until they're married. The priest leaves after that, and an hour later, my fever breaks. Now, the next day, the hospital priest comes into the room to say a prayer for me. My dad's confused and tells the man that someone had already come the day before, to which the man replies that no priests were on duty the day before. He checked with all the hospital staff and their visitation book and everything, and nothing turned up. No priest was in the previous day. He searched for years to find that priest and that prayed for me, and he never found a single trace of him anywhere. Now, a month after my mom and dad got married, my mom got pregnant with my brother. So We'll never know who the mysterious man was, but I like to think he's a guardian angel and he remains with me. And to this day, my dad still has no record of him, not even someone who looks like him. Someone was looking out for me that day, though, and I just wish I knew who it was. Now, a Florida man suddenly hears a voice in his ear that states that he's going to be arrested. 2 days later, without warning, he's arrested. Later, it is proved to be a false claim. Hi, Lon. This story dates to 2009 when I was 45 years old and living in a home I owned in Boca Raton, Florida. I am an educated business professional who enjoys reading about paranormal things, but never really had any encounter to speak of. It was early in the afternoon, and I had a friend over who was helping with some electrical work on the second floor. I walked away for a moment down the hall when suddenly I hear a voice whisper directly in my ear, "You're going to be arrested." I immediately felt weak in my knees and nauseous and got slightly dizzy. It felt as if something or some energy field had transversed right through me. I swear it sounded as if a person had leaned over and spoke right into my ear, but of course no one was there. I had no idea what to make of the message or the experience. I sat in my downstairs office, bewildered by what had just occurred. Now I started to nervously fidget with things and picking up an old ski mask that I had lying there. I don't know why, but I shoved the white paper plate into it and drew rather angry eyes in its socket and leaned it up against the wall of my desk, staring at it, but not aware of the reason why I did it. Now, my friend came downstairs, but didn't mention anything about what had just happened. Frankly, I wouldn't have known how to relate it. 2 days later, at about 6 a.m., my doorbell rang. A short young man stood there and said he crashed into my garbage cans, and if I got a hefty bag, he'd clean it up. I was half asleep, not cognizant of how weird this was, but made my way to the garage. I knocked on the door opener button, and the door started to rise. And then I was bum-rushed by a dozen camouflaged men pointing M16 machine guns at me. I was tackled to the ground, handcuffed, and dragged out front. Now, wouldn't you know it, all these guys had ski masks. In fact, there were about 50 officers from the DEA, FBI, and Palm Beach County Sheriff's Office, all of them masked. It turned out that a particular individual whom I rented a house in another town had been caught making drugs there, and that lowlife told the cops it was my operation just to save his own skin. They came to my house thinking they were going to find Pablo Escobar or a Walter White type. I wound up spending a night in jail before anyone could get me out and sort out the mess. All charges were dropped, of course, but I think some angel or otherworldly being saw this coming and tried to warn me. Because I didn't have any clue as to what was going on at my rental property, and there certainly was nothing going on in my own life to validate a fear of arrest. Some entity knew it was coming and just told me. It didn't really help in any way. Now, I will never forget that voice, although it was no one I could recognize. What do you make of this? I've never told anybody else about this occurrence. Well, I mean, I told Robert that. And his name was Robert. I told him that it may have been a warning from his guardian angel. And I have heard similar circumstances, so maybe it actually was. Now, this next account, a man is traveling through the Nevada desert when a car starts chasing him. He's forced to pull over because of a flat tire. Then something happens that seemed to be the act of a guardian angel. I have a story that goes back to the early 1970s. I'm from Linwood, Washington. I was traveling across Nevada from Idaho down to California. It was early in the morning, and I live outside Winnemucca, Nevada, about 5:30. I was outside of Winnemucca, Nevada, about 5:30, 6 o'clock a.m. I was by myself. It was out in the desert area. It was virtually uninhabited. A car came up behind me with two inhabitants who basically started following right on my bumper. I became concerned because it was apparent that they were really interested in getting me stopped. They would pull up alongside and motion me over and things like that. I was afraid. So as we went along, this played out for several miles and they kept motioning for me to pull over and they came up along alongside me and I became quite fearful. Well, the oddest thing happened. Somehow I was getting a flat right front tire as I could feel the car starting to sway. I pulled up to a stop and off to the right was a house. These people pulled up in the car and stopped behind me. I didn't know what to do. I was afraid to get out and somebody came up out of the house to a pickup truck that was running. And now this was the only house in the area. There was no other house around. And the older man walked out and he looked and one of the people in the car pointed to this guy and they went ahead and pulled on by me and took off. So I got out and looked at the man and he was doing something around the pickup. So I went ahead and got my tire out and changed it and went on my way. Well, it made me quite fearful. So on the way back from California, on the way back to Idaho, I looked for his place. I wanted to stop because it left such a mark on me psychologically. I found the place. It was totally uninhabited, absolutely abandoned. No windows, no doors, just an old shack. I honestly feel that something kept me from being harmed. Something chased those two guys away. Was it a guardian angel looking over me? Well, that's what happened. So who knows? Now, a Philadelphia woman is walking to a mall in an area of the city where she wasn't familiar. A homeless man calls her name and warns her not to go in there. Later that day, several people are gunned down in the mall. And she writes to me, "This is a bizarre incident that occurred several years ago. My ex-wife was walking down the street and a homeless man caught her by name. No big deal. Maybe he heard someone call her that one day. But she had never seen him before or since. The strange part is that when he then said, "Don't go, you'll die. The mall." Now those words chilled her to the bone, so much so that she turned around and went home. Now she had been putting on weight and wanted to be healthier, so she was walking 3 miles in the opposite direction to get food, avoiding her favorite Philly cheesesteak stand. Yes, I do live in Philadelphia. She decided against food altogether that day and was walking 5 miles further to see if she could see a new part of town, as she was only been in Philly for a year. But she had never walked in that direction of the park. Now, this was completely away from anywhere she had ever been or anyone she had possibly known. Then this homeless guy just pops up. Now, despite being miles in the wrong direction, around a place she's never been in a city new to her, a man calls her by name and says that she will die if she goes in that place she planned to go. Let alone that no one knew about where she was going, not even her, until the morning when she got up. So she goes home. Later that day in the news, people are gunned down in the mall she was thinking of going to. Now, after I got this, I tried to find out the day of the shooting because, quite frankly, a lot of shootings in Philadelphia, especially in malls over the years. I do know that this incident occurred at least 4 years prior to me getting the email, but that's the extent of any information. Anyway, is it possible that a homeless man may have been a woman's guardian angel? I guess it's possible. And this next account, a Wyoming oil rig worker recalls his father's warning call by a guardian angel, which may have saved his life. He later experienced a similar warning. in the early 1980s, before I was born, my dad was working in the oil fields in Wyoming. He was a gauger, driving around in different remote facilities, recording gauge levels and reporting them back to the company. He was at one site where he had to climb on top of a tank to read the gauge. He just climbed to the top. He was about to read the gauge when he clearly heard someone call out his name, Mike. Thinking it was odd because he thought he was completely alone and hadn't heard another truck pull up, but he shouted back, "Up here." There was no response. Again, he turned to read the gauge, and then he heard it again, Mike. He decided to climb down and see who was looking for him. Now, just as his head lowered down the ladder past the top of the tank, he heard a loud pop followed by glass raining down on top of him. He climbed back up to find that the gauge he was about to read had just exploded. It probably would have blinded him, maybe worse, possibly even caused him to fall from the tank. Now, he was shaken, to say the least, even more so when he found out that he was alone at the location. He searched high and low. No one was there. There was nowhere to hide, and most of all, there was no other fresh vehicle tracks in the dirt road leading in. Now, after hearing this story, my mother convinced him to quit his job. She had never liked that he was always out in the middle of nowhere with no one else around and considered this close call a warning. She said next time his guardian angel might not be so blatant. Now, fast forward over 20 years, having all but forgotten my dad's story and subsequent career change, I found myself working in an oil field as a derrick hand on a directional drilling rig. It's miserable work, but the pay is excellent. I was finally heading home after a long freezing week on the monkey board, driving by myself with the radio turned off so I could concentrate on navigating the frozen, winding mountain road. Suddenly, as plain as day, as loud as a normal conversation, a voice in the backseat of my truck calmly called my name, John. My heart jumped into my throat and I slammed the brakes, sliding to stop in the middle of the road. I turned around and looked in the back seat as all the hairs of my body stood straight up, half expecting to find a coworker who had picked an unfortunate place to take a nap back in the drilling location. Nothing. No one was there. Now, unlike my dad's story, mine did not have an immediate pair of reason behind it. No truck came barreling in the wrong lane around the corner. No avalanche fell into the road where I would have, had been had I not stopped. But it took me a while to get my bearings and wits about enough to begin driving again. I probably spent 10 to 15 minutes staring at the backseat of my truck, even digging through the week's laundry and searching my cooler for a rogue walkie-talkie or any explanation as what could have resulted into what I heard. I always wonder, had I not stopped, if some tragedy might have been following me later in the trip home. I'll never know. Now, this next account, two kids are exploring the rocks around the Oregon coast when they soon are accompanied by an old man and his dog. Yeah, the kids walk away from the dangerous rock. The man and the dog simply vanish. Now, when I was growing up, my grandmother would rent a beach house on the Oregon coast and take the whole family every year. Now, if you have ever been to the Northwest coast, you know it has large rock cliffs jutting into the ocean. I have always loved climbing those rocks and going out onto them to watch the ocean. Anyway, one year when I was around 10, my cousin and I decided we wanted to go for a walk. So after getting permission, we headed out up the road. Before long, we found a trail that was overgrown, leading in the direction of the coast. We decided to head up the trail and see what we could. This trail winded through the dense vegetation, and in the sandy path, we could see footprints. Before long, we exited the trail and found ourselves on top of one of the cliffs far enough into the ocean that we were surrounded on three sides by water. And we were very excited about our discovery and quickly started climbing all over the rocks. A very short time later, we notice this old man looking every bit the casual beachgoer with a bright blue windbreaker, gray Dockers, bushy beard, and a little white dog. I get the feeling looking at him that he was a very friendly guy, kind of looked like Santa Claus. He meanders over and says hi and tells us to be careful up on those cliffs, seeing how it was so windy, easily 30 miles per hour winds. My cousin and I proceeded to keep exploring, and this guy follows us, standing close by as we make our way around. We are stupid and running and jumping on these sharp, wet rocks, leaning over the edge of the cliff to watch the water spray, etc., all in the high winds. So maybe he was just trying to be responsible. But at one point, when we're leaning over the edge watching the ocean, we start to get a little nervous and say, maybe we should head back. Soon, as we turn around to leave, the guy that had been following us is gone. Now we head back up the trail and are talking about the guy. Both of us thought it was strange that he had just disappeared. As soon as we decided to leave, and by the time we reached the trailhead, we were convinced he had vanished. We turned around and walked back down the trail looking for footprints left by his dog. We found no sign that the guy's dog walked along the trail. There was no other way onto the cliff besides that trail. Now, to this day, I don't know if he decided to carry the dog or if he really had just vanished. I do know that both of us were freaked out after not finding the footprints, and the coincidence of him showing up right after we did and leaving right as we decided to go. I've always felt that he must have been our guardian angel taking care of two stupid kids playing where they shouldn't have. And this is the last account, and this is a pretty interesting one. It has to do with an actual event that most people know about. A Los Angeles man writes me, detailing his waking vision of the doomed Flight 191 that crashed in Chicago in 1979. That was at O'Hare International. He had warned a friend to not take that flight on his return trip to L.A. Hello, Lon. I read your story about David Booth, who had his series of dreams about a plane making a strange noise before it crashed among tall buildings and burned. Years ago, I also had a premonition about the same aircraft that was going to lose its left engine and crash on takeoff from Chicago's O'Hare Airport on a nonstop flight to Los Angeles. Now, here's what happened on May 1979 when I lived in Los Angeles. I had this friend who had grown up in Chicago, then moved to LA, and was planning to going back to Chicago before Memorial Day weekend, and asked me to drive him to LAX to buy his ticket from the American Airlines desk. I believe it was about a week or so before Memorial Day, and he wanted to spend some time with his family and friends he had there before returning to LA on that nonstop flight 191. It's about 2:30 p.m. LA time when we came out of the LAX with his nonstop flight ticket in hand. As we walked out of the terminal and started to cross the street going into the parking lot, I had an ominous feeling and turned to look at an American Airlines DC-10 jet sitting above me where people would board the plane. Now, just at that moment, in broad daylight, in the middle of the afternoon, it seemed as if the whole tail section of the plane suddenly fell to its left and onto me and what I would call a waking vision. It was very real. And I thought the tail of the plane had fallen off and onto me at first. My friend saw me freeze in the middle of the street and with a shocked look on his face, he asked me what was wrong. I told him what I just told you, and we got to the car, and I drove him back to his apartment in Hollywood. He asked me to come by later that evening, pick him up, and we'd go out for something to eat. He didn't drive, so I picked him up around 7:30 p.m. or so, and after dinner returned at dark around 10 p.m., as I recall. It was too late for birds to fly around. Now, he asked me in for a hot cup of tea, and as I was sitting on his couch looking at it, standing in front of the three open windows with no screens, a sparrow suddenly flew in the window in front of his face. It circled his head, startled him, and landed on a curtain rod not far from him. When he looked at me, I had the same shocked expression as I did when I had the waking vision at the airport earlier that day. He told me that I had that same look I did at the airport. To me, a bird in the house, even in the daytime, is an omen of death, at least to my family. Others down south also believe the same thing. I've seen it happen too many times every year at the Pass It Off as superstition. I told him that he had been marked for death by that bird and had something to do with the airplane down at LAX earlier that day. I was upset by what had happened that day, and I drank my tea and left for my own apartment wondering what it all meant. Later that night, I would find out. Now, in a time travel dream, it was Monday, May 25th on Memorial Day, and I was in the American Airlines terminal watching people board that doomed Flight 191. Then I found myself hovering in the air a few hundred feet above the runway as I watched Flight 191 taxi out and begin to throttle up for takeoff. It began its run and lifted into the air just after rotation and began to climb. As it got to where I was in the air, the left engine suddenly ripped loose and went up and over the wing, spewing hydraulic fluid from the wing onto the engine, plummeting to the ground. The plane began to roll to the left, slowly at first, then faster as it became inverted and crashed sideways to the ground and exploded in a giant fireball. Now, at that point, I woke up in my bed in a panic from having had a very realistic nightmare, more real than a dream. I told my friends at the hotel where I stayed about it, as well as my friend who was going to Chicago. Now, some of my friends there knew the other friend who held the ticket to his death. Now, my friend who held the RT ticket was afraid to go at all, and I said, "It's not the plane going to Chicago you need to worry about. It's the one coming back that you don't want to be on." Anyway, I drove my friend to LAX, and he started the first half of his round trip to Chicago. He would not be coming back on Flight 191. A day or two before Flight 191 was destined to roll down the runway to its doom, my friend called me from Chicago. I was in the apartment. I was sitting for him and feeding and taking care of his dog while he was away. He wanted to know if I still held my belief that Flight 191 would crash and burn. I said for him to make out his will and not carry it on board, but mail it to me and let me know what to do with his dog. That shook him up enough to change flights and take an earlier flight that would go through Denver or Salt Lake City or someplace on the way to LAX. He later gave me the new flight number and arrival time, and I met him at LAX. He was shaken up. He found out that why he was flying back to LA on the other flight that 191 had crashed and burned. Now, when I saw him, he said to me, "I could have been killed." I said, "No, you would have been killed. There were no survivors." Now, a strange thing to note about the waking vision of the tail section with the big AA on the tail that fell on me. It was the same thing that happened to me in the dream in the air when the engine ripped off the plane and went sideways. At that moment, when the plane rolled sideways, the tail of the American airline went through me in the air, just like it did on the ground. That was what I was experiencing over a week before the plane really flipped sideways and crashed. Didn't make any sense at the time, but the only retrospect did, it did make sense. The waking vision, the bird omen, and the prophetic dream all pointed to the same thing, a warning to stay off Flight 191. Now, Dan lived, that was his friend's name, Dan lived to tell the tale because he chose to return to LAX on another flight. Another interesting thought crossed my mind about the incident at LAX. I wondered if the plane I saw there physically outside the terminal was in fact the same plane that crashed and burned Chicago on that fateful Memorial Day. I'll never know. Now, as much as David Boot tried to get it right, he didn't have the DC-10 plane or how it crashed or even the city where it crashed identified. I didn't have repeating dreams until the plane crashed, as he did. But do you know? Do you want to know an interesting, if not eerie, coincidence involving David Booth and me? I live in Knoxville, Tennessee, and somehow David Booth moved to Knoxville, Tennessee, and died from heart failure in the University of Tennessee Hospital. He and I never met. What are the odds of two people each having a premonition about the same plane crash and then winding up in the same city? All this story is true, as it is weird and sounds much like the Twilight Zone. And this guy's name was David Pack. And I did talk to David, and everything checked out. And he did send me a statement from his friend who attests that what he told me in this story absolutely did happen. So there you go, folks. Believe what you want. Now, I want to thank Win Nyes for their donation, $20. Nancy Malcolm, the $10 super sticker. Mortal Clown for the $20. And Robo1776, $10 donation. He asked, are dogs considered angels? I don't know. Maybe the dog was placed there by the angel. Or maybe the angel did shapeshift into the dog. I don't know. It's a good story, but I don't know. Let's see what we got here. Got a decent crowd tonight, too. Joshua, 1212, Lon, when are you going to have guests on your show? I miss those shows. Well, I have decided to, at this point now, to just do what I'm doing now. I have been interviewing guests now for almost 12 years. And quite frankly, I just got tired of doing it, to be honest with you. I may go back to it at some point again. I may get a special guest that I want to talk to. But at this point right now, I'm just going to keep doing what I'm doing. But, you know, I could put it up for debate, so we'll see what happens. Let's see. We got any other questions here? Got any other questions, folks? I did put something else down I was thinking about. I had actually posted something on the blog years ago. What I did, I wanted to write down some tips that would help you connect with your guardian angel. So, you know, these are my thoughts, so take them as you may, but this is what I think. You know, angels cannot do anything for us unless we ask or demand. And I say demand. And I have told several friends don't be afraid to demand something. No need to worry about asking for too much. Angels exist beyond our experience of time and space. Create your own affirmations that specifically call for the help you need. And I do say that you should do that. Attune yourself to your angel. Simple meditation can raise your awareness enough to establish a connection. Ask questions. Find out how they want to be addressed. Establish a routine that suits your timetable and make an exciting experience. Have patience, but ask if you feel your question has not been answered. Learn how to interpret the answers. And interpretation is the biggest thing. You know, everybody has their own perception about what they feel or what they hear or what they understand. But you got to learn how to perceive and how to interpret. Now, when you do get guidance, I'd say quickly react to it. Angelic help has, for most part, a finite period of effectiveness. So, if you know, feel safe with doing what you've been told to do, then I suggest getting it done as quickly as possible. Now, I will say with time and practice, you understand what sensations mean, yes, no, or otherwise. Your answer may also come through meditation or after a prolonged period of reflection. Learn how the message is given and how it should be received. Notice patterns in the times when the message tends to come. Show your appreciation for the advice. Like any long-term relationship, trust and respect are imperative. It may take time for you to recognize the signs of a connection, but be vigilant. I truly believe that my connection with my guardian angel has helped pave my way towards understanding and well-being. Now, I will say this. One thing I will, and I did say earlier, is I believe that we have various guardian angels among us at different times. I know of at least two different times for me. I have talked to several people about this over the years. Rosemary Ellen Guiley was one in particular who told me that she believes people can have 5 to 6 to 7 angels in their lifetime at some point, you know, that they don't all stay with you. I guess that may very well be true. I mean, she wrote several books about angels, So folks, you got any other questions? Osvaldo Greco, the portrait of Poe, is an original done for you? No, that's a print. That was from Sam Sheeran. The link to his website is on my blog, but he does the originals and then has prints made and signs the prints. And I've bought several from him over the years. But he's very talented. He does a lot of books. In fact, he does all the covers and drawings for David Weatherly's books, and a few others, actually. Anybody got any other questions? I wasn't going to really do this, the Guardian Angel show. Somebody did talk me into doing it, but I wasn't going to do it, but I'm kind of glad I did now. Many times when I talk about, even when I do interviews, when I talk about guardian angels, angels and such, I kind of get that vibe that, you know, that I must be crazy. But as many of you know, Mortal Clown in particular, who's in the chat, know that I've talked about angels for years and years now. And I think if you can get to that point where you do connect with them, they can help you. I know it's helped me. Absolutely, it's helped me. So, well, okay. You're not crazy, Lon. I appreciate that. Well, anyway, I want to thank each and all of you for watching and chatting. If you did donate, it's truly appreciated. Your support makes all this possible. So please like, subscribe, and share. And like I said before, and I had, since the last year, I got a lot of different accounts from people who were listening to the show. So I appreciate that. If you have a sighting encounter report that you'd like to be considered for this show or post in the Phantoms and Monsters, feel free to contact me at Lon Strickler at phantomsandmonsters.com. So until we meet again, stay healthy, stay safe, and have a good night, and we will talk soon. Good night.